Clint Barton, aka Hawkeye, became the greatest sharpshooter known to man. He then joined the Avengers. This is what he does when he's not being an Avenger. I'm Eddie Webb, and today we're going to talk about Young Avengers Presents number 6 and issues 1 through 5 of Hawkeye 2012, all today on Speechless. Hello and welcome to Speechless. This is kind of a sub-podcast that we're going to do once in a while where either Chris or I decide we want to dig a little deeper into some specific kind of genre media that the normal genre-less format won't quite work for. I asked Chris to do this because the Hawkeye TV show at the time of recording is just wrapped up on Disney Plus and is based on one of my favorite comic book runs ever. And I really feel like more people should talk about this comic book run. So it's not too long. It's about 23 issues long. So I can do it in a few episodes, but it's not something where I can easily just pull out a few issues and really talk about what I think is some of the amazing elements of the run. So I want to spend a little more time digging into it. We're going to do about 6 episodes of these. Each one will cover a handful of issues, try to keep it pacey. As a note, this is going to be a little odd. All of the issues I'm going to talk about, you should be able to find on Marvel Unlimited. So if you get access to Marvel Unlimited, rent it for a month, binge through the issues, you're good to go. And if you left me like $8 or $9 to do that. Or you can buy these in separate trades. I actually have the Hawkeye Omnibus, which was printed about 5 or 6 years ago. I think it's out of print now. They may be doing new printing. Last I checked, it was out of print. So the reading order is going to be a little off, but I'm going to be following the Omnibus order. And if you hear page turns in the background, because I'm actually skimming through my Omnibus book as I read. This is actually one of the few super thick hardcover comic book collections I own. This is how much it means to me. And it's kind of give context to why this is so important to me. I talk about a little bit on genre-less, but I have hearing loss. I have a bone-anchored hearing aid in my head, and I have had hearing loss my entire life. But it's only been relatively recently that I've recognized that my disability is valid and is a part of my identity. And reading the Hawkeye 2012 series was the first real moment I recognized that I can be visible in comics in a way that I did not realize was missing in my life. So this means a lot to me, but also it's just really damn good comics. So if you're into kind of spy, espionage, street level superhero stuff, this is a great series. So I'm going to kind of just dive in. And, what I was mentioning was the Omnibus, it does have its own distinct reading order. So some of the issues are shuffled around to handle the reading order. Some of the trades that came out later have a different reading order. So if you are following through the trades, it's not going to be simple just picking up the next one. You're going to have to kind of bounce around a little bit, which is why I recommend if you're brand new to the series, just pick up Marvel Unlimited if you have a tablet that can use it and just read it that way. It's probably the best. But if not, if you just pick up all the trades, most libraries, you can even rent them through libraries and get them too. Even digital services have some of these. So you should be able to get these relatively easily. They're still around. It's just this specific order may not be available to them. But I'll tell you, each issue you need to watch before the episodes. So this one, we're going to start with Young Avengers Presents number 6. And Young Avengers is a series that ran of Avengers that were obviously teenagers who were inheriting the mantle of the Avengers after the events of Civil War, where the Avengers were dissolved. The Presents series was a 6-issue run where they focused on each of the characters of the Young Avengers team. And so this issue is focusing on Kate Bishop, who's going to be a huge part of the Hawkeye series. It was written by Matt Fraction, art by Alan Davis, inker by Mark Farmer. Color artist is Paul Mounts, and letterer is VC's Corey Petit. This is not the typical creative team for Hawkeye, but this is moderately important lead-in because it helps you understand a bit better Kate Bishop and Hawkeye's relationship specifically. And one thing I want to mention, I'm going to talk about the art here and there. Obviously, for an audio medium, it's going to be not optimal. So if you're not reading along, I'll try to kind of keep it short. But I just want to mention Alan Davis is a fantastic artist. I fell in love with Alan Davis back on his run on Excalibur with Chris Claremont back in the 80s and 90s. And it's still great today. He's such a style of expressiveness. Character facial expressions and body languages are so great. One of my favorite podcasts, which is J.J. Miles Explain the X-Men, talk about how Alan Davis draw some of the best hair in the business, and you could definitely see that in this comic. But that being said, I'm going to kind of skim through this one because it's not vital to the core run, but it's useful to kind of understand where Kate Bishop's coming from. And some of this also makes you kind of have to understand what's going on in Young Avengers to understand what's happening here. So I'm going to kind of skip over the Young Avengers specific parts. She is in she goes into a carriage ride with Patriot, which is one of her teammates. There's indication that, you know, he wants to date her. She doesn't want to date him. The person doing the, or directing the cab, the horse cab, turns out to actually be Ronan, who is Clint Barton. At this point in time, he is no longer Hawkeye. And in Young Avengers, we find it in this comic that Young Avengers, Captain America believed Clint Barton was dead, and so gave her the permission to use the word Hawkeye as well as Hawkeye's bow. That's kind of a relevant plot point to this. So Clint Barton actually gets into a fight with Kate, is impressed by her skill, then says he wants to see how she shoots, so gives her an address, in which the address actually is the quote-unquote temporary headquarters of the Avengers. And we see Spider-Man and Power Man playing video games while Clint takes her to a shooting range. They talk about the so-called Robin Hood shot, which is actually shooting one arrow with another arrow and splitting it down the middle. And she, K-Bart's like, that's a possible shot. Even Mythbusters couldn't do that, which was an actual episode of Mythbusters. Like, it can't be done. And of course, Clint's like, well, I'm Hawkeye. And so they make a bet, which is that if he can make the shot, she'll give him the bow. And he's like, I have a store-bought bow. I have store-bought arrows. There's no art to this. And so he makes the shot because he's Clint Barton. And he comes across as being not very impressed with Kate. So she's upset. Then she gets into a fight with some of her teammates on the Young Avengers. There's a subplot where she goes on a date with Speed to make Patriot jealous. But the main thing is that as part of the date, they decide to actually break into the temporary headquarters of the Avengers to steal back the bow. And she does so. Clint recognizes that the bow has been taken, realizes she's there, and kind of is talking to Power Man, but actually is talking to her and about how he thinks that the Young Avengers have some potential, and that the world's better with the kids in it. So she appreciates that. Starts shooting the bow again. Clint catches up with her and kind of chides her for breaking and entering, but then points out that he was a criminal when he first joined the Avengers. So it would be kind of tradition to have a Hawkeye who's got a bit of a shady past, and gives her a framed photograph of his early time in the Avengers way back in the 60s, back when Stan Lee was writing it. It was Hawkeye, Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch, and Captain America, the so-called Kooky Quartet era. So it gives her a picture implied of that era and allows her to continue to call her Hawkeye. So the idea at the time was that he would be Ronan, she would be Hawkeye. She's officially taken the mantle. So that's Young Avengers Presents number 6. You see there's kind of a complicated relationship between these two characters. Then we get to Hawkeye number 1, the issue titled Lucky. Is written by Matt Fraction, artist by David Aja. Color artist is Matt Hollingsworth, letterer is Chris Olipiolis. And this is going to be the core team going forward. Occasionally, artists are going to rotate on and off through various things, but Matt Fraction is the writer through the entire run, and David Aja does nearly every issue. And we are now a bit ahead. Clint has taken back on the mantle of Hawkeye. The Avengers are back together, so we're now post-Civil War era. Aja's art is just kind of, it's fantastic. There's a kind of clean line that comes from it, but also paired with Mark Farmer's sketchy inks, it looks almost like kind of a blurry photostat, which it's really, really great. And the colors, at this point, color is very, very realistic. There's lots of shades. You see kind of light textures and the like. Paul Mounts does a very flat color scheme, which kind of is a nod towards the original comics coloring, but also his use of color throughout is stunning. It's something that on my recent read through, I realized how the use of color really helps tell the story. So again, if you could look at these are great, but I'll try to kind of point out places where the art or the colors is relevant to the story. But it opens up with what's kind of a running joke of the early Hawkeye runs, which is the Hawkeye going, okay, this is bad, or this looks bad. And the majority of Hawkeye is told through first person, so the caption boxes are actually from Clint's perspective. And later on, when Kate has her own issues, she's going to have boxes from her perspective. So we're definitely looking at it from first-person perspective, from a comics viewpoint. But Clint is falling out of the window and eventually manages to land on a car. Then we cut to the hospital where he's banged up. And even though all this is on one page, the fact is that the early stage where Clint's falling is lots of reds and browns and blues. Then we got to the hospital, we moved to blues and grays. So we get, the time change is primarily sold through a little bit of the art, but also a lot for the color. You see, oh, this is a darker color, so we're in a different location. It's a very subtle thing, but it really, really, really helps. And through this, he talks about how he does not feel like he's on the same level as some of his colleagues in the Avengers. He's an orphan raised by carnies, fighting with a stick and a string from a Paleolithic era, by his own words. And so when he goes in the hospital, he's in the hospital for a while. He's 6 weeks goes by before he's let out through, and he's wheeled out by a wheelchair. And he's so frustrated by the fact that he had to go through this process that he actually kicks the wheelchair into traffic. Then we cut to suddenly he's at a veterinarian with a dog lying on a counter. So basically says, fix this dog. And again, we shift from the orange or red colors to the darker blues. So we see that there's been a time shift as this dog's been hit. So the most of the issue, we're going to go back and forth with these two time frames. But to kind of summarize, basically, Clint, you know, is frustrated by kicking the thing in traffic. It makes his way back home. His whole goal is to make it back to his apartment, his apartment building. One thing that's interesting, again, this is a first-person perspective. Clint doesn't speak anything except English. And so whenever people are speaking foreign languages, traditionally in comics, usually we have brackets around the text to kind of show this is being translated from a different language. Instead, what we see is dialogue like some Spanish-sounding stuff, which is, again, kind of a running gang. You know, later on, you see a Russian character goes, back off, and it goes, Russian, maybe? In italics. So we get the sense that Clint's, all of his dialogue is coming from Clint's perspective. And at the moment, it's kind of just a funny gag. Like, for example, one of the kids is yelling mama, but it has the inverted exclamation point at the beginning. So even though Clint couldn't actually hear that, because earlier he heard Clint with Spanish, he's assuming the kid's saying mama in Spanish. So right now it's used as a joke, but we're establishing early on that all the dialogue we're going to hear when Clint is in the scene is from Clint's perspective. That's vital for later issues, which we'll get to, not this episode, but we will get to. But I want to see that now. And again, we have a Russian mobster who's shaking down one of the tenants of the house where all the rent has been tripled for everyone in the apartment building. and he's just kicking people out who can't meet the rent. Meanwhile, he's trying to get the dog at the veterinary fixed. We don't know who the dog is yet. We then cut to a party on the roof of the building where all the different people are talking about the change and what's going on. And basically, it looks like the owner of the building, who is a Russian in a red tracksuit, is part of a group who's trying to buy up all the buildings in the area. And it looks like their building is one of those. But they're also talking about things like, you know, it's going to rain, it's the Mets, and so on. And Clint is doing a trick where he is snapping a penny to try to break some beer bottles, and it doesn't work. And so his neighbors are laughing at him about it. And then you start to establish that while the neighbors are close to each other, there is kind of that New York style of friendly ribbing that happens through this. And so we establish that relationship here. And again, I want to take a break. I'm only a few pages in, but it sounds like a lot of story because on this one page I just described, there's 12 panels. It is dense. And yet Aja packs in so much information into these panels visually because there's not a lot of dialogue in each of these. I mean, there's like a sentence here and there in each of these panels. So it's not super wordy. At times it can get wordy, especially when Clint's talking to himself a lot. But in some of these places, also it's visually, you're getting a sense of the different people who are talking and what their personage is like. So again, Aja does an amazing job communicating that. But we got back to the early time frame where Clint is eating a piece of pizza. He sees the dog, healthy at this stage, next to one of the tracksuit guys. He's like, can I give the dog pizza? And it's like, no, we don't give dog pizza. What do you hear? And Clint shows a bag of money. And they send him through the back of a Chinese restaurant to an illegal gambling den where he goes to the owner of the building and basically says, I'm willing to pay the rent for everyone in the building. And the bald tracksuit guy is like, I want the building empty. Maybe I don't want to take this money. And while this is happening, Clint picks up some cards, starts shuffling them, pulls out the Ace of Spades, and then throws the Ace of Spades into one of the guy's throats and starts a fight. So there's a huge fight in there. And we cut to the vet where Clint is beat up. And the tracksuit guys have tracked him down to the vet and throw him through the window of the vet. And we cut back and forth between those two things. And basically to kind of help clarify, because it's now getting a little complicated. It reads much easier in pages. It's so easy to follow on the page, but it's hard to explain. But ultimately, they get into the fight. The dog actually tries to help Clint because Clint gave him a piece of pizza. The dog is thrown into traffic by the tracksuit guys. Gets hit by a car. As the car's coming down the dog, Clint takes a coin out of his pocket and flips it through the windshield to shatter the windshield, cause the car to drive off, and it only barely clips the dog. So eventually he makes it to the vet. The vet does manage to save him. And the whole time Clint's going, it's not my dog, it's just a dog name. It's like, I don't have a dog. And it's like, what's the name on the collar? And the collar says, name is Arrow. And Clint's like, I'll call it something better. And this is kind of an interesting sub joke because Arrow is Green Arrow's a pet dog over at DC from way back in, I think it's the 60s or 50s. We're establishing that Clint is an Avenger, but he's just a human. He's just a guy. He's a guy who's extremely good at weapons, particularly bow and arrow. But not only that, throughout all of it, people will say things like, you know, oh, aren't you Iron Fist? Or you're one of the Avengers, but I don't remember which one. So there's not a lot of respect from the community, and Clint doesn't respect himself. And so setting up this idea of a kind of a self-destructive cycle. And that leads us into Hawkeye number 2, The Vagabond Code, written by Matt Fraction, artist by David Aja, color artist is Matt Hollingsworth, and letterer by Chris Lubiolis. And this is the one where Kate becomes in the picture. And again, starts off with the kind of, this looks bad, but then we dive back, and then the whole rest of the issue leads up to that one page. So I'm just going to tell it in order. But Clint's recovered. He's talking about what's happening with the building with Kate. And again, we're seeing these all from Clint's perspective. And so there's a shot of the Daily Bugle, for example, and the title just says, everything awful, oh God, somebody do something. So that's not what the actual paper is saying. It's what kind of filtering through Clint's perspective. And so we talk about, kind of recaps the relationship with Kate. And there's one great scene where Clint draws a bow and shoots an arrow. And time slows down while Kate's talking. And so we cut to very small black-white inserts of Kate as her lips form the words, "Well, then." Well, then that's cool, actually, specifically. And so as you have a visual way of showing that time has slowed down. Again, definitely doing this from his perspective. So they talk about the fact that he noticed there's some marks around town called Vagabond Code, which is an old carny thing when he was a kid in the circus. Basically, it's something that hobo graffiti would use. And talks about there may be something going on involved with the circus. And so they actually get tickets to what's called the Cirque de Nuit, which is obviously a pun on Cirque du Soleil. And they dress up, they go, and they actually see that the Cirque de Nuit is being organized by the Ringmaster, who is an old enemy slash friend of his, mostly enemy, who they ran a circus a long time ago. And he's talking in a foreign language. Again, it's like, you know, French stuff. Wait, maybe some Italian? But it's like he's just as French as fries. This guy's a scam artist, so he knows that he's in the right place. There's some kind of scam going on here. And then there's the knife-throwing act during this, and knife-throwing act, he recognizes the style of the knife-thrower as someone who learned under the swordsman, who was his mentor back in the circus, taught him how to fight. The taskmaster has this kind of spiral pattern on his hat, and he uses that to mesmerize everyone as the and as well hypnotized, basically just robs the whole place. So Clint and Kate split up to try to go after them. Kate beats up one of the circus acrobats to take her outfit. Meanwhile, Clint is captured by the swordsman, the person carrying a sword who was trained by the swordsman. It's a little complicated. And Clint makes fun of him, talks about how his French is bad. And then as they take him out, one of the acrobats is following and turns on them, because that was, turns out, it's actually been Kate in disguise. There's a fight. We lead up to the moments of earlier. And Kate takes a shot to take out the people that are following after them. And there's a moment here, again, it's visual great, is that I mentioned earlier the shot of Clint shooting the bow as everything slowed down. Kate makes the opposite shot. Like, she's framed exactly the same way, and the language used to describe her body as it moves is the exact same way that Clint described his own body as he was going through that moment. So again, we're pairing the fact that these two were of equal skill, and she is very much a mentor of his. And then we get into a long one page of, like, I think it's 25 panels, but it's a phone call between him and Kate, talking about kind of relationship. Clint recognizing that she's good and talks about how good she is, and how similar they are, but how he doesn't want her to get hurt. And they kind of, she points out, it's like, you know, I'm not going to sleep with you. And he's like, no, I don't want to do that. And there's kind of a moment of, like, Kate maybe maybe has a crush on him, but they both recognize that as she's a teenager, that would be inappropriate. And Clint is like, oh God, no, I don't want to do that. Which she's kind of hurt by. Through this, they recognize that they, because they were able to rob the robbers, they were able to get enough money to maybe start buying back some of the debt of the building, and also find out perhaps why the building is up for sale in the first place. It turns out they have pissed off the Kingpin and Madame Mask, who are two notorious criminals, and that sets up for future plot lines. But he now has a list of people and places to go. He calls it his to-do list. So he has a kind of a cork board of all these options. And then we go to issue 3, Cherry, which is written by Matt Fraction, artist by David Aja, color artist Matt Hollingsworth, and letter is Chris Leolvis. And again, I start off with the, okay, this looks bad, really, really bad. And then something else is that each issue is like, you know, this looks bad. Next issue looks really bad. This looks really, really bad. So it kind of, again, the running gag of this escalating of we have the cold open of what's bad, and then we lead up to how it got there. And this leads to one of my favorite fight scenes in this run, which they used a version of in the Disney Plus show, which is the Trick Arrow scene, where it starts off with Clint and Kate talking about all the different arrows. He has that net arrow and suction arrow. And what Aja does is, as they talk about the arrows, there's a little inset panel, which has almost like kind of a schematic diagram of the arrow. And so it looks like they're kind of just, as you're describing it, we as the reader are getting kind of a close-up visual of the head of each of those arrows, which is really interesting. You get a sense of what those arrows look like. And then during this, he points out the boomerang arrow, and she's like, why would you want a boomerang arrow? It's like, do you want the arrow to come back to you? She's like, that's the worst thing. I don't want, I want the arrows away from me. They cut to, a car chase scene where, the earliest scene, the whole point of it was that Clint was trying to actually get tape to color code the arrows so he knows which arrow is which. And he's going out to get tape. And during the course of going out and getting tape, he sees a woman in a 1970 Dodge Challenger. A redheaded woman, she's taking something out of the trunk. And he's like, I'll buy it off you right now. And he's like, okay, sure. You don't want to pay for cash. That's great. He's like, I don't have it with me. I'll get you money right now. And say, hey, is this stolen? And also, could you give me a ride? Because I need to go get some tape to knock my arrows. They sleep together. He's like, oh, thanks for taking me to the office supply store. Without tape. And then she's like, are you in kind of my trouble? And she's like, I won't tell you what's going on. And then as they're talking, the tracksuit mafia break in. And now they're wearing motorcycle helmets. Now, there is a funny gag where, because he's completely naked, they've just had sex, he leaps across the room to try to grab a weapon, and there's a little kind of picture of him in his Hawkeye mask covering over, his genitals as a censoring block, which is funny because that exact image is what was used in the corner box of the original Hawkeye solo series back in the 80s. Is that the exact same image? So they kind of like a neat little callback to the 80s run of Hawkeye. They're coming after this woman for some reason. He beats them up. She's gone. Kate calls him to find out if he's okay. He tells her what's going on. She comes by to pick him up in her VW bug. And again, a kind of note is Clint wears purple and Kate wears purple. And so the color purple is used to kind of tie them together visually. So like some of Kate's car is purple. When Clint's putting on his clothes, his boxers are purple. He's putting a purple t-shirt on. She has purple tinted sunglasses. So they use the color purple, different shades of purple. They use the color purple to kind of tie those characters together in a really interesting visual way. Similarly, Cherry, the woman that Clint sleeps with, she has red headed. She has black jacket with red stripes on her sleeves and the red car with a black stripe down. So again, the colors tie those characters, those items together in a really, really cool way. Kate kind of flirts with Clint a little bit to make him uncomfortable, but they chase after her. It turns out that the tracksuit mafia have taken the Challenger. They've put the woman in the back seat of the car. So now they're chasing after him, and Clint's trying to shoot them down with the different arrows, putty arrow and the like. During the scene, because he hasn't labeled them, he's like, I'm grabbing this arrow. I don't know what it is. Like, it's the sonic arrow. It's an explosive arrow. So he's finding going through all the different gimmick arrows that Hawkeye uses. And sometimes they're useful and sometimes they're not. There's like the rocket arrow, and then finally, I have suction cup arrow, and it kind of uses that to leap out and actually suction cup himself to the car. So you don't shoot that one. So they have this ongoing fight, but Clint jumps to the other car. He gets thrown off. There's a car accident. So the mafia have him at gunpoint. Kate gets out of the car that we're chasing in. She has one arrow left, and he's like, don't shoot. Clint's like, take the shot. So she shoots over the tracksuit's head. And it's like, okay, well, I tricked you. I lied. I'm going to shoot you anyway. And then the arrow comes back because it's the boomerang arrow, and just proving the boomerang arrow has value. And then the woman goes to the airport because she's leaving. The car's messed up. But then he's like, so can anything do to help you? He's like, I won't lie to you. Don't ask me a question. I won't lie to you. So she catches a plane and kisses him and they leave. That is issue three. Issue four and five are both a two-part series called The Tape, one and two. They're both written by Matt Fraction. The artist is Javier Pulido. Color artist is Matt Hollingsworth. And letterer is Chris Lupiolis. Again, you see the art shift, but it's still the flat colors still give it kind of almost a cartoony look. And Javier Pulido's art is definitely a little more cartoony in that sense. It doesn't quite have the edge that Aja's work. It doesn't have the same kind of strong, clean line that Aja has. But because of Hollingsworth's color, kind of it keeps it consistent there. One thing that Pulido does, which does kind of annoy me, is that he also likes to do a lot of his characters in silhouette, and not for reasons like the light is putting them in silhouette. Sometimes it just seems like it comes across like it's either done for emphasis or to kind of sometimes it's just a shortcut. Like I just ran out of time and just colored it in black. It is a style that I am not as fond of. I think it would be fine in any other context. I think this art would be just fine in any other comic book. It's just that compared to Aja's work, you can start to see some of the things because it's not quite as iconic. But it's still not bad. It's just it suffers compared to some fantastic like Alan Davis and David Aja. But anyway, the long and short of this one is that S.H.I.E.L.D. comes by the building in the helicarrier and actually grabs Clint and takes him away. And his roommates are basically making fun of him because, like, you know, big bad Avenger, you know, not too good to be taken away. S.H.I.E.L.D. and Captain America tell Clint that some kind of tape went out. It was a record of Operation Icaricia, and that they need to get the tape back. And they talk about how the reason why there is a VHS tape is because digital information can be hacked, cracked, distorted. And so this allows, if there's one tape of a thing, it allows them to keep close track of it. And it's interesting, they talk about how the increase of digital espionage has caused S.H.I.E.L.D. to go back to analog methods. And it's an interesting touch. I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's valid. But it does set up for a nice MacGuffin of why this physical object needs to be acquired in 2012. So it's a neat way to explain the setup for the clear heist film that's happening. So Clint comes back home. Kate's waiting for him to kind of find out why the helicarrier was taking him away. And he just kind of vague. He's like, I need to go get something. So he goes through the airport to fly out to Madripoor, where the tape is believed to have been taken. He gets arrested by local police because they don't come in. He gets rid of them. And there's a great little scene where like they rush him into a room, door closes. There's a couple panels of a door, and then he steps out with his luggage. And it kind of just make it clear he just took care of all of those guards. It's a nice little touch. It's a way to sell his competency by actually not showing it. It's a nice little distinction. He takes a cab. The cabbie tries to pick his pockets. Then as he's beating up the cabbie, someone else reaches the window, also tries to steal his wallets, which is purple, again, tying that kind of color together. Then a third person tries to grab his wallet, and just really establishing how bad Madripoor is. It's this awful, awful island nation. And in there, it's got his IDs, his Avengers ID, his passport, his stuff like that. He has a credit card, but that's about it. So he actually takes the cab and starts driving the cab around, and he's like, no one expects cabbies in Madripoor to be good. So he just kind of gets the lay of the land, meets people, starts having a montage of learning about the area, and he gets pointed towards the Madripoor Pearl, which is a luxury hotel / casino. He gets black bagged out of the casino, and it turns out that he's been kidnapped by Madame Mask. Madame Mask claims that she has the tape, and she's trying to find out why he's there. And he's like, I want to buy the tape. I'm here for the auction that you're running to buy the tape that you put on sale. And he's like, I have a credit card. She pulls it out. Give me this one here. So they throw him into a room. They close the door. They mention that he has a Amex card black through the Avengers, which means they have no spending limit. So she's going to use that to actually try to get the tape. Kingpin also shows up and mentions that there were 12 parties. He's like, 11 have only showed up. And like, well, which is Kingpin threatens the guy into going moving ahead. And so it's the Magia, Wilson Fisk, the Crimson Cowl, Madam Hydra, and whatnot. Madam Mask bids $1 billion or 1 billion euros. And it's like, okay, actually, you win. So we've won the rights to the tape. Then Madam Mask goes to her hotel room. She takes her mask off. And turns out it's Kate. Kate has actually dressed up as Madam Mask to get the tape. And she's like, what the hell is on this tape? And we see that Madam Mask has actually been tied up in the corner. Clint manages to make his escape. He's attacked by hand ninjas. And as that's happening, Kate watches the videotape, and it shows Clint murdering someone in his hotel room. And she is horrified. Some guards show up. They heard a thump as the real Madam Mask kind of knocks something over. The guards come in. They push themselves in. They recognize that Madam Mask has been kidnapped or had been replaced. Kate is at gunpoint while Clint is falling out of the window when he's trying to escape from the ninjas. So it's kind of a nice transition between the one scene to the next scene. A S.H.I.E.L.D. agent grabs Clint from the air. It's actually Agent Hill. More fighting happens. And then Kate is taken by Madam Mask. She's trying to figure out what's going on, who this woman is. And they start to talk about smoking. It's like, you know, do you have a cigarette? And Kate's like, no. And it's like, you're a kid. Kids have cigarettes. Kids smoke. And Madam Mask talks about how she used to smoke for years, and quitting was the hardest thing you ever do. It's like, it's not the cancer, it's not the disease, it's the fact that I hated not having control over myself. So I just kind of forced myself to quit. And yet, out of nowhere, she's like, I would pay $1,000 right now for a cigarette. And it turns it into a creepy threat. It's like, I'm going to actually start smoking and then put them all out on your face and just horrible things. I have no problem killing a little girl. But then come back talking to the other people who are bidding in the auction. And it's like, she's like, I'm so sorry to hear what happened to you. And the way that people like Kingpin and Madam Hydra are talking, it's like, we were so upset to hear about this. Is this the person who kidnapped you? It's like very, very subtle, but there's clearly a lot of one-upmanship happening between these different criminal overlords. Outside the window, we see Clint on the little kind of floating sled thing that S.H.I.E.L.D. rescued him on. He uses a sonic arrow to shatter the glass, come in, and he and Kate fight their way through AIM agents and Hydra agents and ninjas all the way through to get to the tape. They acquire the tape. During this, Clint had lost his shoes. So he's running on broken glass. So his feet are bleeding the whole time. Again, kind of just this steady reference to the fact that he's just a normal mortal person. Madam Mask manages to track him down, tries to shoot them, but they get into an elevator before she can get there, and the bounces off. Clint wakes up in the S.H.I.E.L.D. hospital, and they talk about the tape, and Clint reveals that, you know, Kate's like horrified. He's like, Clint, I saw the tape. I saw what kind of things you did. And Nick Fury arrives and says, actually, no, what you saw was a fabrication. It was a Navy SEAL team that did the assassination, but to protect identity, we made several tapes, one with Wolverine, one with Captain America, one with Hawkeye. And so that way, if one of them gets lost, we know where the leak happens and we can track that down. So the tape was completely fabricated, and Clint didn't actually do the thing that he did. And Clint's a little like the fact that you actually think I did this is a little hurtful, but you know, the people who actually did it, you know, it's not up to them. Their family shouldn't be targeted for retribution. They shouldn't have to suffer the consequences for doing what they were ordered to do. So I was willing to take one for the team because I don't have any family. I don't have any loved ones to be threatened. And most of the ones that I do have are superheroes. So Clint feels like it was kind of I wanted to help. He's like, it was the thing I could do to help out people who he felt are more genuinely heroic. And so Kate's like, hey, you know, I guess you're okay, Barton. And so that's issue 5. So we'll kind of stop there. But I ran through that because I kind of wanted to show some of the things that are happening already in this series. The one is the fact that this is a series told initially first person, but then around the time of the tape, we start to include Kate's viewpoint as well. But again, both cases, we're following a character and their thought process and observing things through their eyes, which is something that's really interesting to do from a comic book, because usually by design, it's almost always a third person perspective. We're seeing the action happening, so we don't see ourselves as necessarily being in those characters' heads. So Matt Fraction and Aja and Polito all take efforts to make sure that that is clear. There's what's happening here. And again, that's going to be relevant for future issues. I cannot talk enough about the use of color, and colorists, I feel frankly, are not given enough credit in comic books. But in this case, the way that the color ties together and color themes together is really important. Again, Polito's art doesn't lend itself to it as much, so it's not as easy to see, whereas the very technical lines of Ash's art, the color stands out more and you get a better sense of how these colors are tying together. In the back of, I know it's an omnibus, I don't know if it's in any of the trades, Helmingsworth actually talks about his color process and how he gets a palette together. And so each of those pages has its own distinctive palettes. And it's an amazing look at how you can color comicking bring emotion and depth into the line art and the words in a way that I don't think people consciously realize. But also there's a establishment, the fact that Clint gets hurt just about every one of these adventures. He's in the hospital just about every one of these adventures. He is a man who's puts his body on the line constantly. He doesn't have a healing factor. He doesn't have invulnerable skin. He doesn't have armor. He's just, like he says, a guy, you know, with a stick. And that's a running theme, the fact that he's just a man, but yet he still makes these decisions that to him seem simple. And we also reestablish, this is established by the character, but this show, or this series takes time to establish in his first 6 issues, the fact that Clint came from humble backgrounds. He was a criminal, but he's trying to do what's right. And so therefore we definitely get a strong impression of the fact that Clint is trying to make good for his past mistakes and his past decisions. And then we have Kate Barton coming in, who inherited the Hawkeye mantle. And then, of course, Hawkeye came back. But they still call each other Hawkeye. Clint respects Kate's skill, respects Kate's position as her trying to be a superhero. She definitely comes across as very sarcastic. She definitely has the kind of quippy, funny lines that you would expect for a modern Marvel hero to have, frankly. But through this, her respect for Clint is very well established and is a interesting running theme. It sometimes comes across as, you know, she has a crush on him, but she's, you know, at this point, I think 17. So that's an understandable potential reaction for a 17-year-old girl to have to an older male mentor figure. But neither of them capitalize on that. Neither of them, they're just friends. And that's established over and over again, but she respects him, even though she makes fun of him and jokes with him. She respects him and idolizes him in a way that he is deeply uncomfortable with. So they can't articulate it directly. So it has to come out in other ways. So Clint saying, you know, you're good, Kate, is a huge admission for him. And it's the point where she doesn't always believe it when he says it. It sets up an interesting dynamic. It's not exactly a toxic friendship, but certainly is a friendship that is not good at communicating to each other. They have to find different ways to get what they want to say across. And so when she sees the tape of Clint killing someone, that's devastating to her because that really reframes what she thinks this man is. And so when she finds out that it's not true, all she can say is, I guess you're a good man. But she means it. You can tell that because in that particular panel, she's grabbing his hands as she says it while he's in the hospital room. And you know, the fact is that when he gets captured by S.H.I.E.L.D. and then brought back, she's there waiting for him. When he has a problem with Cherry, he calls her and she comes. So, I mean, they care very much for each other. Again, they're very good friends, but it's not always on the page. And the ribbing is certainly there. But sometimes Kate does what I like to call aggressive flirting. So where when she realizes that flirting with Clint makes him uncomfortable, she does that to get a rise out of him. At one point when again, he's getting his clothes on quickly as she pulls her car around. He's pulling a shirt on. He's like, go, 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 go. And she's just staring at him. He's like, what are you doing? And it's like, are you serious with those abs? And he's like, will you just go? And she's like, hey, keep your shirt on. I mean, it's funny. It's silly. But it's weird because like there's no actual sexual tension there, I think. It's just how their relationship works. And that relationship is taking the piss out of each other, to use a British colloquialism. So it's an interesting, it's not quite a deconstruction of superhero comics. I mean, it's not Watchmen. It's not The Boys in that respect. But it does start to show you the consequences of these lifestyles. Again, the fact that Clint's in the hospital pretty regularly, and we see like 6 weeks pass, you know, months pass. The time is passing through this, and most of it is Clint being injured in some way. Pretty much from issue one on, Clint has some kind of injury pretty much nonstop through this run. And that relevance. Kate also starts to become injured, and how she handles that and the cost of that is really interesting. So that's the first six issues. We're setting the tables for the relationship between the two and the overarching thing, which is that Clint's trying to figure out what the building is for, why everyone's so interested in it, and what these different criminals have to try to gain from this relationship. So, and of course, the Tracksuit Mafia and their whole dynamic with it. The Red Tracksuit guys are going to be kind of the main antagonists, but we are going to see bits and pieces of the higher levels. But really, at the end of the day, it's Clint versus just some thugs, and we get 23 issues of story out of that. Is really, really interesting. So that's it for this issue. Next issue, we're going to bounce around a bit. We're going to read issues 7, 6, 17, 8, and 9. I know it's bouncing around a bit, but 7 and 6 work a little better if you invert the order. And then 17 is what is normally called a fill-in issue, where if people are running behind a little bit, they kind of just drop it. They make it an existing issue to kind of drop it in to help the artist catch up, because one of the later issues took David Aja a long time to get right. And we'll get to why that is and why that issue is so amazing for having taken the extra time when we get there. But it's a flashback issue, so It from a reading perspective, it works better to read it right after 6, because 6 leads into 17 in a charming way. And then 8 and 9 is kind of the return of Cherry and Apple Penny. So we're going to start seeing themes coming back. So next issue, 7, 6, 17, 8, and 9. If you want to talk to me more about the Hawkeye run or even the Hawkeye TV show, I'm happy to chat with folks online. I'm on Twitter at Pugstady, P-U-G-S-T-A-D-Y. You can also find more of my work at Pugstady.com. And I am right now these days hanging out in the Darker Hue Discord. So if you want to just hang out there and talk about the Matt Fraction run. Basically, I'm going to ask that before the episode goes live, kind of keep spoilers tagged, so that way people who are still reading it can enjoy the story. Once the episode's live, you could probably talk pretty openly about each episode and what's on there. So how it's going to work is, this is going to be the opposite weeks of Genreless. So next week, we're going to have, our fourth episode of Genreless. And then after that, we'll have episode two of this. So we're kind of bouncing back and forth. So yeah, I'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a good time.